The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, biggest cat's outcry since that movie, Chelsea with their Abu Dhabi do. Untruths universally acknowledged, what's it like to have games in hand, midweek action, and a big weekend preview. It's a bumper Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. All right. It's Thursday, 10th of February. You are the listener. We are Duncan Alexander, Lindsay Hooper, and in a rare audio appearance, Nick Miller.
Hello.
Yeah, that's what he sounds like. Straight disconcerting, isn't it? The man behind the Totally Football yearbook and loads of great pieces on The Athletic. What are you writing at the moment, Nick?
I'm writing a piece about football as documentaries, particularly these kind of single subject things, with a Wayne Rooney documentary out this week.
Oh.
My central point being, why do these footballers bother doing them? And yeah, I think it's going out Saturday.
Is the answer money?
In an indirect way, yes. It's also kind of ego and trying to, as everyone I spoke to said, control the narrative about their lives and careers. So.
Love to control the narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
The Rooney video, the second most shared bit of footballer video this week, of course, number one being Kurt Zouma with feline, flying feline. Which I must admit, I saw briefly at the time and then, you know, immediately switched off. And I went back and watched the whole thing today because I thought we'll probably be talking about this after he played for West Ham on Tuesday. It is extraordinary. Any thoughts on, beyond what he did, but the big controversy after West Ham's game against Watford was the fact that he started.
I think it was a delayed reaction. I think we got there in the end. The cats have been taken away, which I think is what most people wanted to see first. There has been a hefty fine, huge fine, isn't it? £250,000.
Yeah. He's lost a sponsorship. One of West Ham's sponsors has also withdrawn, has ended their relationship over this as well. It's the right kind of action to be taken, but I don't think David Moyes' comments after the game helped many people with the fact that Kurt Zouma just started as if nothing had happened. Am I overreacting here?
I don't think so. It could have just been avoided if he'd have not played Zouma against one of the worst teams in the Premier League. So even his football decision defence didn't hold up massively. He could have, even if you just look at it from a fairly cynical PR point of view, he could have saved everyone a lot of trouble and potentially money by the sounds of the sponsors dropping out if, you know, he'd have just kind of done the right thing. Moyes, of course, earlier on in the season defended people who are sceptical about the COVID vaccine on the basis of diversity as well. So he's building up quite a portfolio.
I can't understand the football statement from Moyes that it was a club matter and that he had to deal with matters on the pitch. Because, of course, it's a football matter. You know, even when you're safeguarding players in other circumstances, when there is public anger, and there was probably anger as well from a lot of people playing on the pitch as well. We heard some of the chants, didn't we, from Watford fans when he went down and had a little bit of a kick. You know, that's how the cat feels. But that could have actually escalated. So there was a footballing angle to this. I mean, it might have even been that there was a hefty injury to Zouma afterwards. It could have gone that way even. But
Watford players had taken retribution for the feline world on Zouma.
Or just been a bit rougher than usual, you know?
If you haven't seen the video, and, you know, well done for not watching it, Zouma does essentially drop kick a cat. Well, he takes a cat from another room, walks into the kitchen, and then drop kicks it across the kitchen floor. He then proceeds to, from the video, hunt the cat and throw things really violently at the cat. His son then catches the cat, places it on the table for Zouma to hit. I mean, it's not one act of violence towards a household pet. It's a pretty concerted kind of sustained period of nastiness.
I mean, it's difficult to phrase this. I mean, you absolutely have to It's a terrible act. It's awful. No one wants to see that. But also the kind of surreal nature of this week of looking, glancing up at Sky Sports News and seeing that cats have been taken into care, and it's just, you know, it's, sometimes it feels like the, I mean, I predicted at the start of the season as a joke that a dog would be loose on a Premier League pitch at some point this season. I got the wrong animal and the wrong scenario, but it does. There's a level of kind of extraordinary surreal narrative to the Premier League that does set it apart from many things, and I don't think anyone saw this coming, did they?
And you looked up again, Duncan, and then saw the cat at Sheffield Wednesday that was kindly escorted off, and apparently had been a missing cat, and it ended up being found.
Well, that, you know, the yin and the yang and the karma of the...
If some good comes of the Kurt Zouma business, perhaps it's that.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that occurred to me was, are there more players with the letters CAT in their name to have scored in the Premier League than DOG? So it's actually not. They're
you
quite
know
close,
what, Duncan?
So...
Don't worry. It's okay.
What? Do you want to know? I think people want to know.
We'll save that to the end, then, shall we? We'll save that to the end.
Number of goals, I'd be going dog for Drogba if it was number of goals. But are you talking
about
different
then.
Goal scorers?
Go on, Duncan. All right. Well,
Cats ahead. Cats ahead. It's another win for Cats.
Yes, the right decision. Thank you, Duncan.
All right, well, much more of this kind of thing on the way. We'll hear from Natalie Gendre, who's out in Abu Dhabi on the Club World Cup final, Chelsea-Palmeiras, coming up on Saturday. But first of all, we've got some Premier League midweek drama to talk about. Let's get the scores. Tuesday, big win for Newcastle, 3-1 over Everton. Moving out of the bottom three, Platoon, leaving the Toffees just two from the drop. West Ham beat Watford 1-0, and Burnley held United to a 1-1 draw. United's players now want a new manager, we read. Wednesday, a mad game in North London between Spurs and Southampton. Saints eventually emerging 3-2 winners. Elsewhere, it was pretty busy at Villa, and their 3-3 draw with Leeds. There was a 1-1 draw for Norwich and Crystal Palace. Wolf Zaha with a remarkable goal and an even more remarkable penalty miss. And Man City beat Brentford 2-0, and of course we'll be talking loads about that. Still to play, Liverpool-Leicester, that's on Thursday, as is Wolves-Arsenal, Lindsay. In the meantime, who saw what? Did anyone catch the classic slice of Premier League ding-dong, back and forth, bit of VAR, bit of clattering challenges, side order of hubris that was Spurs 2, Southampton 3?
Another one in by Ward, Prowse, another header, and another goal as well. He's changed this time, and Southampton have turned this game on its head and lead 3-2.
Duncan, what was your favourite bit of this mad evening's entertainment?
I mean, probably the Antonio Conte mini meltdown towards the end. It's rare to see a manager so angry after his team have taken the lead, but I mean, I think Southampton had every right to say there should have been a foul on the touchline.
So this was Emerson Royale taking out Armando Broja.
Yeah, and obviously Broja had been played brilliantly, and he was pretty much clattered. I mean, I think everyone can agree it would normally be given as a foul. Anyway, play went on. Spurs took the lead, and it looked then like they would go on to seal a probably unfair win, because Southampton played absolutely brilliantly in the game. They pressed them. They were just, I mean, kind of really want Southampton to win the FA Cup, because they deserve something from, you know, after the last few seasons of losing 9-0 here and there. You know, Salisu was brilliant again. A lot of Ghanaians wondered why he didn't go, but there we go. But yeah, Conte got really angry with Southampton's protests. And then the Lord Hubris, as you said.
Is it possibly the most hubris inviting thing you could do? Shush the opposition when you take the lead when you're a Spurs manager?
You are invoking some forces that you do not know. I mean, you know, they dug too deep when they built that stadium.
But as you say, though, in many ways the fair result, because Saints were absolutely brilliant. Amidst a tricky, what looked like it was going to be a tricky run for them in the Premier League, they've now drawn at home with Manchester City, beaten Spurs, and they've got Man United coming up on Saturday, speaking of teams that have beaten them 9-0 of late.
We have to always bring that up.
Well, it was a singular result. What about the work that Ralf Hasenhüttl has done with Southampton? Did we expect to see them there in 10th place?
No, not at the beginning of the season, I didn't. But as much as Duncan was loving the sideline antics of Conte, I was loving the reaction from Hasenhüttl. You could see how much passion he's still got. And if you're a Southampton fan travelling and watching that sort of game, and then you see your manager react in that way, there is a lot of fight in this team yet to come. So it wouldn't surprise me if they do go on a really good run in the FA Cup. I think there's a lot in this team now. I mean, James Ward-Prowse, I think I'm bordering on getting fed up of like waxing lyrical about him because he's so good. His deliveries, I don't think there's anyone else in the Premier League that can put it on a postage stamp like he does. They had Spurs on the ropes. My only criticism is that certainly in the first half, I think they got so much more possession, so many more shots. They weren't burying the game at that point. Mm. I mean, they came away with the win here, but it could have ended up easily a draw this one, and they would have felt hard done by. So they need to get that over the line. But this is the sort of result that we'll see them kick on, I think. You know, they're not going to sit back now. If they can get anywhere near seventh, why not go for it?
All right. They will go on a run after this result, says Lindsay. Clip that up for Monday's show. 23 shots they had, 10 on target away at Spurs. Spurs only mustering 8-3. Nick?
To answer your question to Duncan, I think my favourite moment of the game, I think it was in the second half, there was a cross over to the back post by a Spurs player, might have been Reguilón. And basically, Harry Kane looked as if he was going to head it straight in, and then Emerson Royale went up for it as well. Which kind of reminded me of did we all see that guy who was on Question Time a couple of weeks ago, who'd basically, he was arguing with the immunologist based on some like documents he'd found on Reddit or something?
I studied philosophy at university.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, so it's just like...
Mike Dean's yellow card system, yeah.
Yeah, Emerson Royale just kind of barging the expert out of the way to kind of, you know, try and score a goal, but you know, probably should have left it. Yeah, Emerson Royale is, as we all are, tired of experts.
The James Ward-Prowse question, though, here's Kesha Varanvol, indeed, asking why he hasn't moved to a top six side yet. Surely he's good enough, says Keshav. His dead balls alone should be worthy.
I think we'll talk about Brozier moving before James Ward-Prowse does.
Well, he's owned by Chelsea, no, Brozier. So,
yeah, he'll go back to Chelsea, I imagine, because strikers are a rare commodity at the minute. And obviously the fortunate goal that Lukaku scored in the Club World Cup, the way that it fell to him, will help his confidence. But there is definitely room in that squad for Brozier. So I think he'll go. Yeah, James Ward-Prowse moving on. I don't know why someone hasn't come in from, say, the top four sides for him. I think he could... I look at Grealish's move to City and I think James Ward-Prowse could actually have offered them something else.
If it was a yard faster, I think he would definitely be at a top four, top six club. But he, as we know, his dead ball play is exceptional. Weirdly, that was only the second time in his career he'd got two assists in a Premier League game, but only took him 2 minutes 16 to do it. And it was both times Spurs were like, yeah, just as James Ward-Prowse. We enjoy watching him cross the ball. Let's see where it goes. Oh, dear. But yeah, I think... He's obviously been on the periphery of the England team as well, and he is, I thought it was unlucky not to get into the Euro squad. He does offer something very different.
He wants to be David Beckham, essentially. I mean, he's been chasing down those records, hasn't he, scoring free kicks in Premier League matches.
Yeah.
So why not Man United, actually?
I think, weirdly, if they do switch to five substitutes, I think he could go to a big club. I think he's the sort of player that a big team would love to have on the bench for a certain... You know, if you see a game is going a certain way, bring him on. That might give him, you know, a bit more potential.
Spurs' top four ambitions take a knock after their 2-0 defeat as well in the previous game by Chelsea. Southampton, as we mentioned next up, will be at Old Trafford, where they did lose 9-0 last time, taking on Man United. Intriguing matchup this because it's Ralph against Ralph... assuming there are no changes by the weekend, Ralph Rangnick against Ralph Hasenhüttl. The pair previously working together at RB Leipzig match between 2016-2018. Hasenhüttl was manager, Rangnick the sporting director. Well, Man United, we've heard about Southampton, but Man United warming up for Saturday's clash with another disappointing result. 1-1 draw away at Turf Moor against Burnley. I'm reading Thursday morning that Man United's players want Pochettino. Why? And where does this come from? Nick, you're in the journalism biz. Have the Athletic had calls from people briefing for Man United players or Man United or Poch? What's behind all this?
I mean, this will be a briefing from, I suspect, someone's agent who plays some player for Manchester United who has been leaking some kind of thing that may suit them. You say I'm in the journalism game myself.
Yeah.
Maybe on the edge of it. So right. I kind of hear things third hand. But
fourth hand for you, listener. How does that feel?
Yeah. This is why you're listening to this. Fourth hand information. I don't know. You get kind of. I've read a couple of things saying, well, you know, the why should the players be deciding the manager? Which, I don't know. It feels like a slightly odd thing to say because it's slightly easier to. It's easier to get rid of managers than it is for players. So why don't you just kind of tailor to appoint the managerial appointments of the players you have?
Nick, no, that's madness. That's like that way lies Lord of the Flies.
You've already lost the dressing heads room on day one. And,
yeah.
Well,
you can't have managers depending on the players' favour. Should be the other way around.
No,
anyway,
I think it's at least worth, you know, some feedback. I don't know. Are there any players in the United squad who have played for Pochettino before? I think it's at least worth, you know, asking the question. Maybe not if they're demanding that someone comes in just because suits them.
Yeah. Burnley fans, and they are legion, are demanding that we talk about Sean Dyche's great work at Tufnell. Wouldn't it be great actually to see Sean Dyche take over at Old Trafford? In the meantime, he's fighting this rearguard campaign with Burnley, who pick up a point thanks to Jay Rodriguez's equaliser after some phenomenal work by that Vogt Weghorst, eh?
The big man, the giant, the Ent of Lancashire. That's my new name for him. I don't think I'll catch on. Yeah, I love him already. I think he's my favourite Premier League player. Just
already.
Yeah, and maybe ever. He's just a
humongous
man.
Who's he usurped in your heart?
Kevin Davis. So you can see the thing.
Yeah.
No, probably not. But I mean, it does vary. But I do enjoy a kind of a team signing a player who just fits into that team. I mean, it goes back to the next point, Manchester United, I think. But it's a cliche, but a good touch for a big man. His bit of play to set up that goal was great. He had a shot that David De Gea made a really good save from as well. Burnley, they really woke up in the second half. They didn't have a shot in the first half, but they were all over United in the second half. And it was a lot of United fans on Twitter at half-time saying, oh, we've played really well, but we all know what happens now. We can only do one half. Mm. And people going, yeah, but it is Burnley. But lo and behold, you know, it happened. And United were lucky to hang on in the end.
Mm. All evidence as well suggests that Burnley have made an upgrade on Chris Wood. But Weghorst looked much better.
Ranić was saying after the game, he kept going on about, we scored three goals, and two of them got, I mean, I think correctly disallowed. Mm. It just seemed a bit strange that he was kept kind of going on about that in a post-match interview. I mean, you know, whoever's doing his PR has really got their work cut out for him.
A lot of people seeing positives in what even, and Carl was making this point on Monday, that the idea is there, the execution isn't yet. Should United and their players trust the process?
You can't really trust a process that's only going to last 6 months, can you?
Right, is that the
unless
issue?
Is he the
supply teacher in the unruly?
Yeah, that's the vibe, isn't it? You need the sort of the fear of longevity in the dressing room.
Didn't he joke, though, that he might appoint himself because he was going to go further up the chain and then potentially appoint himself when he's in that new role? So we could see more of him. A dual role, maybe.
Yeah. All right.
Caretaker, director of football manager. It's never been done, but not yet. We should also point out that once again, Ronaldo didn't look particularly happy. I'm starting to think that see you is just short for see you back in the dressing room because I'm going straight off the pitch.
Nice. All right, well, he's without a goal now in his last five appearances. That's his worst run at club level since also going five games without a goal at Real Madrid. That was 11 years ago, crikey. Burnley, with that point, still bottom of the table. But we'll look at the situation in the relegation fight and all the games in hand that a little bit later on. Man United's top four rivals, meanwhile, Arsenal still to play. They'll be facing Wolves, as we heard at Molineux on Thursday night. West Ham beat Watford to move back into fourth place. Jared Bowen with his sixth goal in his last six games. What a remarkable 2022 he is having. Watford, meanwhile, two games so far under Roy Hodgson, yet to score. Very good. Well, I mentioned Burnley still being bottom. They're 4 points from safety. They have two games in hand on Newcastle, who have just emerged from the bottom three, and we'll hear about how they did that next.
Hi again, listeners. It's me. I'm Carl Monaghan from Paddy Power. Chelsea, on the back of European dominance last season, had huge ambitions to taste Premier League glory this term, and when Romelu Lukaku joined from Inter for the best part of £96 million, it seemed that he may have been the final piece of their jigsaw. It just has not quite happened for the Blues this season for a number of reasons. Tuchel's men have struggled for consistency. They've won only 10 of their last 20 games in all competitions before flying out to the UAE, hardly the form of a league-winning juggernaut. It's fair to say that Lukaku, so far at least, has failed to justify his massive price tag with just 10 goals in all competitions to date. Of course, he got the decisive goal the other night for Chelsea. But Chelsea, under the Germans' reign, are an opportunistic bunch, as we saw last season's smash-and-ground win in the Champions League. And more opportunity presents itself this week, as the Blues have a great chance to be crowned FIFA Club World Cup champions, and all they have to do is beat Palmeiras in the Club World Cup final. The Brazilians meet Chelsea after disposing of the African champions Al Ahly of Egypt in their semi-final on Tuesday. A second-half strike from one Dudu settled the contest. On Wednesday, Chelsea avoided stepping in Dudu themselves when they booked their place in the final after seeing off the Asian champions Al Hilal in their semi-final. The Paddy Power traders don't fear the Brazilians. They make Chelsea 3-10 to win the competition. Palmeiras are 11-5. And then in the match betting, folks, Chelsea are odds on at 13-20 to win the match. The draw is 27-10 and Palmeiras are 15-4. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or indeed the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s. T's and C's apply. BeGambleAware.org. And remember, take time to think.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Producer Charlie's just been on to say that the one Man United player who's previously featured under Pochettino is Luke Shaw, who did it at Southampton, of course. Don't know what that means. Ooh, Totally Football League show's out today, Thursday, with Matt Davis-Adams. Among the many talking points, Derby getting to just 4 points now from safety, and Fulham continuing their extraordinary title bid. They beat Millwall 3-0. A brace for Alexander Mitrovic, which takes his tally to 30 league goals this season. And it's still only February. Duncan, hit us with a stat.
No one has hit 50 in the second tier since George Camsell got 59 back in the 20s.
Is that a true fact?
That is a true fact.
He
George Camsell famously obviously did 59. Probably went, I'm a bit disappointed it wasn't around number 60, but at least that record's going to last for a long time. And then the following season, Dixie Dean got 60. So poor old George Camsell. But yeah, I think if Mitrovic can get to 50, which isn't, on the current rate, is about 49, 48, 49-ish, so it's doable, then that would be some achievement.
He's currently, as per your Twitter feed, ahead of Brentford and Millwall for league goals this season, and only one behind Palace. Extraordinary.
But has he found his level?
I don't know, Lindsay. Maybe they'll have a view on that on the Football League show. Maybe. The offside rule is also out now, with an eye on Chelsea-Arsenal, which is coming up, Lindsay. Mark this one in your diary. Friday night.
I better mark it in my diary. I've got to be there.
You're going to be hosting coverage, no, for Sky Sports?
Yes, I will. I will be in the studio for this one. Everyone's talking about it as a title decider. I'm not sure if that's a bit strong because we've had some shock results this season. So we've seen Arsenal lose to Birmingham. We've seen Chelsea lose to Reading. Those results are there. They could happen at some point. So I don't think it's a decider, but I think it's a momentum shifter. Is that how you describe it? If Chelsea win, then... It suddenly becomes them that are in the hot seat.
For any listener who maybe doesn't follow WSL as assiduously as you do, why would you tell them to tune into this on Friday night?
Oh, it's going to be the game of the season. And I mean, I won't even hold back to say that it's probably going to go a long way to telling us who will win.
Right.
There obviously are quite a few fixtures left after this one, but when first versus second, 2 points in it, Chelsea can leapfrog Arsenal. Chelsea proving as well in recent seasons that they know how to win and they can win ugly sometimes. Tactical matchup as well between Jonas Eidevall and Emma Hayes. Yeah, it's got everything. You've got Sam Kerr as well back, and she's been fantastic for Chelsea this season. You could see Fran Kirby coming. I think actually the front three for both sides could be really interesting. So we could hopefully get a few goals in it.
All right. Well, the last meeting back at the Emirates was pretty special. A five-goal thriller there. Let's see what Friday holds. Back to the Premier League. Tuesday night in Newcastle. Newcastle 3-1 winners over Everton. Looks like that January window might just have saved the Magpies' bacon after all. New signing Kieran Trippier with the standout performance alongside perhaps Alassane Maximin.
Yeah, I mean, when Newcastle signed Trippier, it was I think there was a bit of kind of, I don't know, doubt why they were spending so much money on a right back in his 30s, about, you know, whether that will have a particularly significant impact on their form. But obviously they basically signed a whole new defence, and as we saw, Trippier's free kicks and crossing ability when you've got someone like Chris Wood in the middle as well was a huge difference in this game, and we've seen, I think, will be for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and also you're kind of signing an attitude, like a professionalism that I think that Newcastle defence pretty much hasn't had for a while. And you saw it in that game. He was, as you say, Nick, outstanding going forward, but really good at the back, very organisational. He was defending his teammates when there were fouls. He was talking to the referee. He was passing on instructions. It's that sort of almost intangible level of quality that you get if you've played for, you know, big teams, you've played for Atletico Madrid in the latter stages of the Champions League, etc. So, yeah, it did seem a bit, as you say, a lot of money for a right back in his 30s, but I think it could be one of the, if he stays fit, he did look slightly injured at the end of the match, but it could be one of the key building blocks for Newcastle.
So Maximin as well, I mean, obviously, he was obviously brilliant in this game, and when he plays like that, you do get this sort of Ward-Prowse question of why he isn't playing for someone a bit better. But as a neutral, I think he's kind of in the perfect place, because if he played for a top six team, then there'd be so much more attention on him that you would see everyone picking out his, you know, fairly relatively considerable flaws as well. So it's just a bit nicer to have him in a team like that, but maybe don't get as much attention. And when he does get that attention, it's to watch the highlight reels of games like Tuesday night, when he just looks absolutely sensational.
He did. And every time I watch Newcastle, he's head and shoulders their best player. I mean, we're talking about Trippier, but I think Sam Maximin edged it on this one. He is unplayable at times. I think there are lots of Premier League opposition players that would name him in their top three of not wanting to come up against them. Now Adama Traore's gone as well. He's definitely in the top three.
Did you say head and shoulders? But his head and shoulders are magnificent, comfortably the best hair in the Premier League. And, so much fun to watch. It's nice that he's not gone to one of the bigger sides. Nice to have players like that around the rest of the division. A hugely entertaining game, this, starting off with back-to-back own goals to get things underway. Jamal Lascelles diverting a Mason Holgate effort into his own net. And then what felt like about 3 seconds later, the two players inverting at the other end.
Yeah, it's the shortest gap between two own goals in Premier League history. And it's the first time that they've inversed like that as well. So it was just a glitch. Occasionally, you know, there's a glitch in the game and you see some of the code and there it was. But it set up the game really well, because the first own goal came from a ridiculously stupid Jonjo Chelvey tackle on the right wing, you know, which you can coach some things out of players, but you can't coach that out of Chelvey, I guess. But it was a really kind of, it reminded me of a game from the 1990s, actually. It had a sort of kind of ebb and flow. The atmosphere at St James's Park obviously was very good, and you could see that both teams knew that it was a huge match for the rest of the season. Frank Lampard hadn't quite grasped that you don't play Jordan Pickford away at Newcastle. That was the first time Pickford had played in this fixture since 2019.
With Southgate watching.
Yeah, he did all right, relatively. And Everton, they're 1 point ahead of Newcastle now, and I know they've got a game in hand over them and a few others, but they're in quite a lot of trouble. That was Lampard's sixth defeat in his last nine Premier League games, obviously including the end at Chelsea. And yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting few months.
A couple of other fun things about that game. Newcastle in their match day squad, having not only the tallest player in the Premier League, Dan Byrne, 6'7", but also the shortest player in the Premier League, Ryan Fraser, 5'4", who of course got the second goal, giving the Magpies the lead. And of course it was Trippier with the free kick, which was his first goal since August 2018. I was stunned by that bit of information, who made it 3-1. Everton have been in the top flight since 1954. Duncan, are you saying that they're actually going to go down?
No, but I think they're in for a bit of a scrap, and they might go down. Stranger things have happened.
They're placing quite a lot of faith in the sort of plan to keep them up and revamp in January. It was appointing a manager who no one really knows whether he's any good or not, and then signing a couple of midfielders, one that everyone thinks is great but has barely played in 18 months, and the other that people sort of vaguely think, well, maybe sprinkle a bit of midfielder magic dust on him and he'll get back to his old self again.
Right.
When Dele Alli kind of, there were, if you include the sort of last knockings of Pochettino, there were four managers there who didn't get a tune out of him. So he may well be the classic kind of change of scenery guy, and he'll turn out to be great for Everton, and Lampard will teach him everything he knows. But it feels like a bit of a punt.
Those signings were pitched as these are players that have got something to prove. I didn't see that in this game at all. I didn't see it from Dele Alli. I didn't see it from Donny van de Beek at all. And that's concerning, isn't it? You know, when you've just signed, you've got the new manager, usually you get that purple patch, don't you, from those new signings and coming in and trying to prove yourself. It's then about maintaining it and having consistency. He's got to get a tune out of them really quick. Maybe the best signing was El Ghazi.
The caveat for this game, obviously, is that they'd lost a couple of very important players in the first half to injury. Demarai Gray's probably been their best attacker this season, and Yerry Mina's is kind of essentially the only grown-up in their defence. And he's, I think, probably quite concerned about him because he's barely played this season, and a couple of the times he has played, he's immediately got injured again. So that's a big problem for them.
I mean, they need Calvert-Lewin back. He is the best forward, even allowing for my boy Wout Weghorst, is probably the best striker of any of those teams down there have got. I think if you put Calvert-Lewin into the Newcastle team, a fit Calvert-Lewin, they'd be fine. So yeah, that's been a big loss as well this season. So getting him fit, I think he will play a bit like Tammy Abraham did for Lampard. Similar, has shot some similar sort of areas, but I think Everton have got enough. But you know, there's always one team that really sort of spirals down in the second half of the season, and it could be them.
You have big players as well that need an arm around them, and you think about Lampard's attention right now, is he going to have to give...
How many arms has he got?
Yeah, how many arms has he got? And is he going to have to really focus on Alli and Van der Beek? I think about Demarai Gray, and I think maybe he'll be ignored. Maybe some of these players that have actually been doing really well, Anthony Gordon came through, maybe they're going to get ignored, because now these names have come in and they're going to demand more attention.
Well, hopefully he's got a big enough heart for all the squad, but they have got a game on this weekend. It's Everton Leeds. Will Frank be sending scouts out with pliers to the Leeds training ground in revenge for Spygate when Leeds were fined $200,000 when a member of the Leeds staff spied on Lampard's derby? Only for Leeds presumably to then go and play exactly the same way they always do, but yes.
And the kind of funny part of that was that Bielsa gave this kind of punishingly long press conference after to kind of explain why he did it, and as part of that he basically said, look, it probably doesn't make any difference at all, I just get a bit twitchy if I haven't massively overprepared, so this is part of that, it doesn't really make a difference.
Alright, well, dossiers will be being prepared even now on Frank Lampard's Everton. Everton now just outside the bottom three. They're only 2 points from the drop. Newcastle only 1 point behind them. And 1 point ahead, the Magpies of Norwich, who have dropped back into the danger zone with Watford and Burnley. Burnley have only played 20 games. Everton have played 21. Newcastle and Watford have played 22. And Norwich a whopping 23. So Burnley, and to an extent Everton, have an abundance of games in hand. That's always regarded as a positive. Nick, you've just written a piece about what it's actually like when it becomes a bit of a millstone hanging around your neck.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because every person in football, kind of managers, players, former managers and players, said that you don't want lots of games in hand because it does become a bit of a millstone, and you know, the extra pressure on the games in hand is counterproductive. But then, with a huge assist from Duncan Alexander on this.
Hello.
Looking at the previous examples of teams that have had a lot of games in hand in the Premier League, almost all of them improved after the point where they had lots of games in hand, and no one's. I think the most anyone dropped in terms of league position was one place, and this was about 12 or 13 teams. So, anecdotal evidence says a bad thing. Kind of actual evidence suggests that it's a positive.
There you go. Duncan Alexander is not just there for how many teams have the letters to cat in them.
It's players, not teams. Come on.
Primarily, though. The
primarily useful, cat and dog.
The useful statistical stuff is is very much a side project of his. The cat right. stuff is what is the real kind.
Yeah. Drives him. That's the
Precisely.
Passion.
Precisely.
We all enjoy the sport we call the beautiful game.
But since I've retired, I've discovered an ugly, even darker side to the sport we love.
Join me as Jamie Redknapp investigates.
Thanks, Jamie. We'll take it from here. Join Jamie Redknapp for Jamie Investigates, the football mockumentary series. Watch on Paddy Power's Twitter. This week, Jamie investigates people who still call the Premier League the Premiership.
Do you know the truth?
Paddy Power.
18+, begambleaware.org.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
We've just been talking about Leeds. What game that was at Villa Park?
Sensational. It was one of the best fun games I've watched in some time. I mean, Villa were... Leeds started brilliantly, then Villa were incredible for about 20-25 minutes. Mm. Jacob Ramsey scored two goals. You kind of when they signed Coutinho, they're different players, but I kind of thought you sort of worried that Ramsey was going to kind of get forced out of the team a little bit, which would have been a huge shame. But they seem to be dovetailing beautifully at the moment. Obviously, Coutinho's pass for Ramsey's first goal, I think it was. Or was it both goals?
Yeah.
He assisted.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
the pass for the first one was absolutely sensational. And a couple of kind of very different but equally sensational and composed finishes. Villa then kind of dropped off quite a lot in the second half. Ezri Konsa got sent off. And Leeds kind of did their thing and got back. I particularly enjoyed Dan James's. I think it was the Leeds' second goal. He went up for a header with Mings and Konsa. Mings, he started out directly in line with the ball. Mings knocked him out of the way, and then Konsa then knocked him back into the way, and the ball then hit his head and went in. It's a glorious kind of human pinball that eventually resulted in a goal for Leeds.
It's like a toddler on a trampoline with 2 8-year-olds just getting bashed back and forth.
Yeah.
Crikey, that's quite an image. Dan James with a fabulous brace in that game, which is a real boost for a player whose end product has generally been brought into question. Philippe Coutinho now with as many Premier League assists this season as Jack Grealish.
Yes, and Dan James with as many Premier League away goals this season as Cristiano Ronaldo, which, given the transfer dealings at the end of August at Old Trafford, might make you think. Clap the fans as well at the end. So,
a pointed message to his former teammate.
Also this midweek, Man City had a 2-0 win over Brentford. Riyad Mahrez becoming only the second Man City player to score in five successive Premier League appearances.
That won't last long with Pep's rotation.
Well, but it's his appearances, no? So as long as when
he
does get
his
a chance,
appearances.
He scores.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, well, there you go. That's a nice stat
for him.
What if
Pep plays the first existential formation in football history? So he scores, he's not actually there. Then it'll shatter that stat.
Okay. And facing Man City next are Norwich, who had a 1-1 draw with Crystal Palace. A 1-1 draw in which they took the lead after, what, Duncan, 38 seconds through Teemu Pukki?
Yeah, fastest goal this season in the Premier League.
Is that right? Is that right? And then Wilfried Zaha had, well, a worldie, and then one of the worst Premier League penalties ever?
Yeah, he sort of slipped and kicked the ball into his ankle. And yeah, it's the sort of penalty that you'd get a retake if you were a kid, but this is the Premier League, so I'm afraid not.
It reminded fans of kind of 90s blooper videos may remember Peter Devine, the guy who basically tripped over before taking the penalty and scuffed it in a sort of similar manner.
Was it captioned Divine Comedy? I hope it was.
I think in many places. For an article, there's the strange places that...
To err is human, to foul up a penalty is divine. Did they do that one as well?
I mean, maybe we should reboot this just so we can use those. For an article a couple of years ago, I tried to interview Peter Devine and actually managed to get hold of him, but he politely declined to talk about it because presumably he thought I was going to take the piss royally. But yeah,
right. Okay.
Presumably, like, of course you were.
I was gonna ask it how it had affected his life, and you know, talk about it in a very human sensitive way.
Keep getting run up by Nick Miller. It's a nightmare every day.
Not the only time, of course, that penalty incident. Not the only time a Devine has had to eat on camera, of course. anyway,
how long
Norwich...
have you been sat on that one? How long?
So Norwich taking on Man City, who they actually beat. Do you remember this? Last time Man City went to Carrow Road, it was admittedly pre-pandemic, in far off pre-pandemic time, September 2019, but that was their last visit to Carrow Road, and Norwich beat them. Fabulous. All right. Do you want to have a quick run through what's coming up this weekend? Yeah, here we go. Man United up against Southampton. That's the early game on Saturday. Then you got Norwich, Man City in the evening. Between those two, Everton, Leeds, Watford, Brighton, and Brentford Palace. Sunday, there's Burnley, Liverpool, Newcastle, Aston Villa, Spurs, Wolves, Lindsay, and Leicester, West Ham, Foxes v Hammers, which sounds like an entry from Kurt Zouma's diary. It's actually a Premier League match. The reverse fixture, which saw Mikel Antonio celebrate with a cardboard cutout of himself. Do you remember that? That also seems like
I was there for that
ago.
One.
Oh, were you, Lindsay? Oh,
and I saw the setup beforehand. So when they came out to warm up, he came over to where the bench was. I didn't know it was a cardboard cutout, but I knew something was down there because he gestured. Oh, I might need that. And I was like, there's something going on here. But yeah, the whole dirty dancing. And then he got the film wrong, didn't he?
Yeah. He did. Bless.
Save the last dance. You know, remember the lift from the end, save the last dance.
Anyway, now Leicester have only won three of their last 11 games in all competitions. They've also got a terrible record against West Ham. They're going to be taking on Liverpool Thursday night, though. So maybe their run of results has improved at Anfield by the time you hear this, listener. I don't know.
So on the offside rule this week, we've actually dissected what has gone wrong at Leicester, whether Brendan Rodgers is to blame, because apparently he's now number one for the chop next in the managerial sackings, according to the bookies. So you look at the job that he's done. I wondered, and I'm sure Duncan's the one to refer this to, but if there is any correlation between the head of recruitment changes. That was something that I looked back on. I saw that Steve Walsh obviously left the club having assembled that title-winning team. And then 2019, Lee Congerton came in at the club. And it feels like a lot of the purchases, they aren't players, are they, that they've bought in from abroad. They used to have some really good links with France, as we know, and then develop these players, and then they go off to be these great assets. They haven't done that for a while. Is it the recruitment?
Yeah, recruitment's a strange one. Although you can get, even within a single person, they can have a couple of seasons of really good recruitment. You know, like Steve Walsh left Leicester to go to Everton, and they kind of went, well, we're set now because he made Leicester title winners. But it doesn't necessarily work like that. So, yeah, maybe. I mean, there's also been a flurry of physio changes recently, hasn't there? So I like the idea of a transfer market for physios. Like they issue a come and heal me play or something. But, yeah, I know Leicester, did they lose theirs to Palace or something? So who knows?
I'm not sure. Lindsay, Spurs taking on Wolves, 2 o'clock on Sunday. No Adama Traore. What's
no,
the point?
No, but he won't be on the other side either, James.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Crikey, he could have been, right. Yeah.
He could have been. I wouldn't have liked that.
No. But are you sad to see him go? Has the magic gone for you a bit?
The magic had started to wane a little. I mean, by the time he actually left, he'd started looking like he was going to score goals again. Yeah. And you also saw how much it meant to him and the rest of the team and how much the club just really loved him. But I think I was at the ebb in my love for him, whereby I was ready for, if he was going to go then, go and go to Barcelona. Absolutely don't want to see him playing against us in any other Premier League team. Mm. That wouldn't have been nice. So I can cope with it.
Okay.
I think he is eternally going to be that player that you think has all of this promise and slightly underdelivers. And I wonder whether he'll ever be on par with those two. Because if it does, it will be electric.
Okay. Oiled up and glistening. What a magnificent sight. He was
electric
Duncan's...
and glossy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure what that means, so I'm just going to move on. Duncan, you said that Vogt Veghorst now your favourite player. I'm going to ask Lindsay and Nick, in much the same way that there are actors who you'll go, oh, I will watch that film because they're in it, which footballers will make you give a game your attention? Or, like, name one. Who's your favourite?
I mean, We talked about him earlier, but Sam Maximan.
Yeah, I was just thinking. I was thinking Sam Maximan's one.
A classic neutral's favourite. And
is there another one?
Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah.
I love watching Kevin De Bruyne. The way that he just sprays those balls around, love it. And also, he has a really good shot on him.
Yeah, no, he does. I mean, technically, just
Cedric Suarez for me.
Cedric Suarez. Yeah. Why, Duncan?
Honest, box to box for a fullback.
Okay. Excellent.
I was going to say, also, Bukayo Saka is very entertaining. Yeah. Someone, I think during the Euros, someone described him as the concept of fun playing football, which I quite enjoyed.
Well, Smith Rowe as well. I really like watching Smith Rowe. Hmm. Moutinho for me, though, from Wolves.
Crikey, we're getting quite a lot of players. Huh? Anyway, yeah, there you go. Spurs playing Wolves. Are Wolves going to win that one, Lindsay?
Yeah, is that Tottenham Hotspur Stadium? I mean, looking at what Saints did, you'd hope. But I actually think we're short in attack at the moment. So it's one of those where if Tottenham, as they did against Saints, scored two, I don't think Wolves can score three right now. So I'd take a draw.
Wolves are at Tottenham. Chelsea, meanwhile, will be playing at the Emirates. The actual Emirates.
Hey.
In the Club World Cup final. In a lovely bumper final part, we'll be getting the latest from Natalie Jedra on the ground in Abu Dhabi and more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. And with Paddy Power, if something doesn't go quite according to plan, you can get your money back as a free bet if one leg of your bet builder lets you down. And that's got to be good news for all you Man United fans out there, eh? Pre-match bet builders only. Get your stake back as a free bet. Minimum 4 plus legs. Max free bet £10. Excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. It's over 18s only. And please, gamble responsibly.
It's the 10th of February, listeners, still. I know it's been going on for a while, this podcast, but on this day, 10th of February 1996, Brian Laws threw chicken wings at Ivano Bonetti. That very same day, quietly, Faustino Asprilla made his Newcastle debut, coming off the bench in the Tyne-Tees derby against Borough and setting up the equaliser.
Asprilla. Brennan in the middle, so is Watson. Good skill. Here's Watson! What an entry into the Premiership.
Newcastle went on to win 2-1. A great start, but it is a truth universally acknowledged that Asprilla was the extra egg that ruined the pudding that Kevin Keegan was making. And Newcastle had been 9 points clear at the top of the table when Asprilla joined. They didn't win the title, and it's all his fault. Duncan, is that fair?
It's not fair, really. I mean, unless he was employed as Darren Peacock's defensive coach, which I'm not sure he was, I don't think you can blame him. I mean, if you look at assists from when he joined in February to the end of the season, he assisted 2 more goals than any other player in the Premier League in that time span. So he did essentially what he was supposed to do. They just kept on conceding. That's down to Keegan and his coaching staff, I would say.
Well, you're probably not wrong. Are there any other commonly held footballing truths that you'd like to shatter while we're here?
I don't know if it quite qualifies, but one of my a favourite kind of fact, similar exotic signing in for North East club, Fabrizio Ravanelli played.
Oh, yeah.
He played more games for Derby than he did for Middlesbrough.
What?
Yeah. I couldn't tell you about a single game he played for Derby, but he played more of them for them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a turn up, hey?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you score a hat trick on your debut for Middlesbrough, that, you know, people just lodge
that. It's going to stick in your mind, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the 1990s was a fertile time for these things getting lodged in people's heads, and then they kind of stuck there. So for years, people used to say you need 40 points to stir up in the Premier League, which for a couple of seasons in the 90s you did. It's around 36 now, we'll pretty much guarantee you.
But the last 5 seasons, 37 has kept you up, hasn't it?
Yeah, but to be fair, I think I've heard that less in the last few years. I think that one is slowly fading from popular imagination. But these things do sort of, you know, Michael Owen, a 20-goal-a-season striker, never scored more than 19 in a Premier League season. So, you know, people imagine stuff and it's not true.
Yeah, a lot of food for thought there. Magnificent, thank you. We've got Natalie Gendre on the line from Abu Dhabi to tell us all about the Club World Cup. Of course, Chelsea are bidding to become only the third Premier League side to win the greatest, most prestigious title in club football. They're going to be up against Palmeiras on Saturday. And may I just mention that you can watch this. It's at 4:30, but you can watch it even though there's that blackout. You can watch this through the blackout because it's in Abu Dhabi. It's not affected for some reason. It's a loophole. Brilliant. So tune into Channel 4 for live football on TV Saturday afternoon. Let's hear a little bit more about Chelsea Palmeiras from Natalie Gendre. Hello, Natalie.
Hello, James.
Good. How's Abu Dhabi?
Very warm. And busy because, well, I've been covering for Brazilian TV, for ESPN Brazil, and Brazilians go crazy about the Club World Cup, so it's a big coverage here.
Absolutely. There seem to be loads of green Palmeiras shirts around in pictures I've seen. Chelsea fans as well who were present for Wednesday's semi-final clash with Asian Champions League winners Al-Hilal out of Saudi Arabia. Were you able to see this game?
Yes, I was there and I actually got a chance to speak to a few Chelsea fans because there were a lot of foreigners and Indians and Saudis and supporting Chelsea, people from all over the world supporting Chelsea. But I managed to find a few British ones who made it to Abu Dhabi and are following the team, yeah.
All right, what did they make of the performance? Romelu Lukaku with the only goal of the game, his first since January the 8th, but it seemed to be as much about the chances that he didn't take, that Chelsea didn't take, as anything else. They almost came a cropper for the second time in a week, indeed.
Yeah, Kepa had some work to do on the second half. It wasn't the most inspiring performance from Chelsea, definitely against Al Hilal. You can imagine that these teams, when they play clubs like Chelsea, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. So they really give it all, and Al Hilal, they won their previous match 6-1. They are an organized team. They have a good manager, Leonardo Jardim, who managed Monaco when they reached the semifinal in 2017. So they were very organized, and they really tried to attack Chelsea, and Chelsea didn't respond well on second half. I think they looked a bit laggy at times, and wasted a few good opportunities, especially on the first half. On the final third, but we had a really good performance from Kovacic. Lukaku scored, which is always good in terms of confidence for a striker, and we'll see. But I really think Chelsea should step up their performance against Palmeiras, because with Palmeiras it's going to be a different scenario.
Mm-hmm. Lukaku has now scored 2 goals in 2022 against Chesterfield and Saudi Arabia's 4th best team, Al Hilal. Okay, so as you say, Palmeiras, a different magnitude of opponent. Palmeiras, who were 2-0 winners against Al Ahly. End of the road for Al Ahly in the semi-final. With the second goal from Dudu. What a stunner that was.
Yeah, it was a great goal. Well, Dudu is the player who's most identified with Palmeiras today, because he had 2 spells on the club, and he's been delivering in big moments for a very long time. He knows the club really well. And actually, Palmeiras has been in this process of change, of deep change, for a while now. Their manager, Abel Ferreira, is a Portuguese manager. He's young, he's 43, and he changed absolutely everything in the club. The fans absolutely love him, and he brought that European vision and more professionalism. And Palmeiras is a very organized team due to Abel. So if you ask any fans, oh, who is the main guy in Palmeiras? They're going to say the manager. They're going to say Abel Ferreira, because he changed the mentality. He changed the way they play. He changed formations, and he's getting the best out of players who weren't performing well enough before that. So Palmeiras, they don't have that many stars, if you might say, but they're very aware of what they need to do, and they're very organized and disciplined, and they're playing for their lives against Chelsea, definitely.
Crikey. Well, as you say, South American sides feel this competition so much. They haven't actually won it. The European sides have won the last 8 finals. In fact, the last time that the South American champion won was in 2012, and oh my word, it was against Chelsea Corinthians. What do you think? Are we going to see Palmeiras wrest back the global crown this Saturday?
Well, I think it really depends on how Chelsea can behave. Because if Chelsea can play at their best, they're going to beat Palmeiras. But if they can't reach that level, I think Palmeiras will be definitely very competitive, very competitive. And I actually think they may have a chance, because they are so focused and because this is so important. There's an estimate of around 15,000 Palmeiras fans who made it to Abu Dhabi, very long trip. So the atmosphere is going to be all for Palmeiras. And as I said, they're very aware of how they should behave, and they're very disciplined, and they're very focused. This is huge for them. So they are playing for their lives, and Abel Ferreira created this mentality and this focus for their players. And we know how much talent, and in normal conditions, Chelsea would beat Palmeiras. But you have all these factors and motivation that really can play a part in this final, definitely.
Crikey. Natalie, amazing. I hope you enjoy the game on Saturday, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you, James.
Natalie Jedra. Lindsay, I know you saw the game against Al Hilal. It was you.
I did. I enjoyed the coverage, Jimbo.
Did you? Great. Okay,
yeah,
fabulous.
I did. I was doing the press conference, actually, afterwards. I didn't ask a question.
Oh, you were doing it remotely via Zoom?
I was doing it from my office, yeah. And it was one of those where I'm so low down the pecking order of journalists for that one, because we were doing it from a Premier League angle, that all the questions I would have had got taken. So I just sat there in the background and scribbled down notes. But I think it's an interesting one about Kepa and Mendy, and who will start the final now.
Yeah, because Mendy's back from AFCON, his triumph there. Any word yet on whether Thomas Tuchel, who himself had to be doing his work via Zoom for the semi-final, having tested positive for COVID, whether he'll be able to
Yeah, that
be
was
there?
Covered as well, actually, by one of the journalists before they got to me. He actually is having another test soon. Mm-hmm. If he gets a negative, they're hoping mm-hmm. he could fly out for the final. But
Brilliant.
There's no confirmation on that, but they're hoping to get him out there.
Must be imagine if you were if you're doing a press conference and Duncan Alexander's got the question before you and he goes with how many letters cats and dogs in your team's players, and you're like, yeah, but
I think they'd like it. Refreshing.
It would have been refreshing. It wouldn't have taken my question away.
No, that's for sure. Yeah. But it might have taken the time away, Lindsay. That's my
could have done.
I'm only joshing, Duncan. Did we ever resolve that question, by the way? Cats were ahead.
You can hear my dog getting involved.
Yeah.
Well, the top.
Go and give it a kick, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Because I went quiet doesn't mean I acted on that instruction.
Right, you know, fair enough, which is clearly an attempt to make light of a desperately awful situation.
Well, that video's getting released.
I mean, you're still going on the form this week, you'll still get picked for the next edition of the podcast. So,
right,
so
yeah.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. Sorry, Duncan, you were going to say something.
I just thought of another really good truth that was disproven by data.
It's
a bit late. Which is the famous classic Manchester United team of Schmeichel, Gary Neville, Irwin, Pallister, Johnson, that one. They only played once in the Premier League, which
right.
Manchester United fans, it baffles them, which is fair enough. And you know, I've had people say, no, I was at this game, and they definitely all started that game. And then, lo and behold, there's a Jesper Blomqvist messing it up, or a Nicky Crikey. Butt. That's the way it goes.
There you go. Our perceptions of reality. That's what it's all about, listener. We'll be back with more thoughts on that and football on Monday, reacting to, well, those games that we just mentioned and much, much more, of course. For now, it's many, many thanks to Lindsay and to Nick and to Duncan and producer Charlie and you, listener. Have a great weekend. Keep it totally. We'll be back with you on Monday. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.